mentioned swelling in the mucous membranes. These are tied to the liver process, the kidney process and the bladder. Consider supporting those and giving the body some support for that. Look at diathesis 4 and the water element. If there's a sudden onset of symptoms and conditions, a lot of emotion involved, a lot of irritability, hyperactivity, we're looking at the liver and gallbladder for involvement. They need to be supported. And we would treat that with a diathesis 1 and wood. And these elements and this therapy and covering those the organs here to support that part of the body would be in addition to other therapies that might be chosen to help the neutralization or desensitization that's already been defined. We may have already discovered a chemical sensitivity here. We may have already discovered a pollen or weed sensitivity here. We might have already discovered a food sensitivity here. And in addition to doing that desensitization or neutralization, we could add these therapies to enhance the response. In addition to those pieces, there are certain emotions that go with those elements. And I'm going to try to add that to this part over here as we discuss these, so that you get the idea behind the emotion. Here's the emotional piece then would be tied to this part. On the fire side, we'd look for emotion of rage. Hysteria or impatience could be a part of that. On the earth side, on the chronic or slow with the stomach and spleen, we'd look for worry, sympathy, or obsession. On the metal side with the lungs and large intestine, consider grief or sadness, possible emotional clues. On the kidney side with the puffiness and the bladder involvement, consider an emotional clue to be fear, nervousness, or insecurity. And on the liver side, irritability is the emotion. Frustration can be a part of it, or the next, or anger. The emotional state can give you some clues as to the related need for support for the symptoms or conditions, or even here, the diathetic therapies that could be used. So we have rage, hysteria, or impatience. We have worry, need for sympathy, and obsession. We have grief or sadness. We have fear, insecurity, or nervousness, and they're quite distinguishable from worry. And anger, irritability, frustration. Those things are all significant in that process. Using these elements, it will help to contribute to balancing the therapy as defined for the process of eliminating the allergy responses in the body. A significant part of the diathetic therapy provides a stimulus, as we've discussed on the tape for diathesis. The diathetic therapy will provide a stimulus to address the genetic predisposition for allergy. It will supply a great deal of support for that response on a cellular level to eliminate, in part, that tendency for allergy. So if you haven't viewed that tape yet, it will be covered. If you've viewed that tape yet, you already know what we're talking about here. But these are significant things to add to the part or process of taking care of a person that presents with a number of allergies. We've discussed several aspects of different things. This particular area is to discuss concepts relative to process and relationship to foods and hydrocarbons, and that particular area is called phenolics. Phenolics is an important area in taking care of sensitivities. If a food is reduced down to its basic chemical components, that is how we determine what a phenolic is. A complex food here's what we had for lunch. It can be broken down into different carbon molecules with different sugars and different things attached to it. And those different kind of molecules tied to that process, different sugars and things like that, are the complex hydrocarbons that go into making a food, and those are the phenolics. Dr. Gardner in Utah determined that this sensitivity was the basis for larger sensitivities, or the foundation for other sensitivities. So basically, when an evaluation is done, support for food allergies and food sensitivities can be covered by eliminating the sensitivity to individual hydrocarbons called phenolics. And we provide with your equipment a list of those phenolics and the foods that they're associated with, and also at the end of this videotape will be a section that is also found on some of the computers you might have that show what things these phenolics appear in, and the food chart allows you to track things. A particular, for example, quercetin is one of the phenolics. It's a bioflavonoid. It's a complex hydrocarbon, and it can be found in about 78% of the foods that we eat. Somebody that's quercetin sensitive has a great deal of sensitivities to a number of other foods. Rutin is the same thing. There are other hydrocarbons that exist as a result of the combination of those items. And so in treating phenolics, it's important to eliminate allergy by eliminating some sensitivities to those things. It's often found that allergy is a function of a multiplicity of sensitivities, and phenolics can provide for that process. By eliminating the phenolic sensitivity, we often can eliminate a particular food sensitivity. Now, the important aspect of this, when the food sensitivity gets eliminated, continued support can be provided, and covering the sensitivity for phenolics will allow for the process to take place. And it's important to examine that and cover that and give the body support. As we've talked about with symptomology and conditions somewhat, and in other tapes it's discussed, sometimes a person will eat a food on one particular day. Let's say they eat milk one day, and milk doesn't give them a problem. They eat it at the next meal and it doesn't give them a problem. But on the third meal, all of a sudden, they start having sensitivities. The next day they'll avoid milk altogether, and the third day they'll still have symptoms and conditions, but maybe they'll eat another protein in some form. Or sometimes foods will be avoided and yet the symptom will still come back. Sometimes there's not consistency. For example, you could eat tomato and tomato doesn't bother you. Next day you eat an apple and apple doesn't bother you. And the next day you eat something else and it does bother you. The milk proteins and the phenolics in there can contribute to those sensitivities. So it's important to look for the correlation, because the sensitivity could actually be in an ingredient in the particular foods. So pay attention to the food list, and where one food has, example we gave was tomato. Tomato is high in malvin. Malvin is what gives tomato a part of their red coloring. But strawberries are also high in malvin, and so are grapes. And so let's assume that somebody's malvin sensitive, but they can't figure that quite out. And so one day they eat grapes and they get really sick, so they avoid grapes. The next day they eat strawberries, get really sick. The next day they eat a tomato and get really sick. And actually what you're tracking there is a mild insensitivity. If you know the ingredients, the concomitant reaction with foods, you can help avoid some of those sensitivities. You can help eliminate those. So study the chart, study the things that are available on the back of the, at the end of this tape. The computer has a part of the program that will help address phenolics. But phenolics are some ingredients or combination of different elements that can go together. You take one phenolic here and one phenolic here and one phenolic here and combine them together and you have an egg. And you take another phenolic here and another phenolic here and another phenolic here, combine them together and you have orange juice. You take one phenolic here and one phenolic here and combine them together and you have peanuts. And oftentimes a phenolic sensitivity to the sub-ingredient is what creates the response, where the whole food is not a problem. The category or the ingredient in the food is a problem. And knowing that process and being able to address it will help significantly with allergy. It would help significantly in removing and eradicating symptoms. Phenolics also, as a hydrocarbon, tell us some things about our environment. That air pollution is also the same. So it's important to be aware of that. If a person is phenolic sensitive, chances are this is environmental chemicals are a possibility. It would be important to address that aspect of it. Another part of allergy I want to address has to do with concomitant reactions, and these have been studied. Just some real quick relationships. There's a relationship between elm pollen and a milk sensitivity and ragweed. So oftentimes if somebody is elm sensitive, you might look to see if they're milk sensitive and also if ragweed comes up. Another crossover reaction can have to do with cedar. A cedar sensitivity can be related to pathogenic yeast, and that can be related to a sugar intolerance. And that seems to make sense, but sometimes if cedar is very active and you can't eliminate the cedar sensitivity, you may have to go and eliminate the sugar and yeast sensitivity before you're able to cover the cedar sensitivity. If somebody's very milk sensitive and elm happens to be pollinating, you may not be able to eliminate the milk sensitivity without covering the elm. If somebody's very ragweed sensitive, you wouldn't want them drinking milk because that can aggravate the process. So you get the idea of the relationship there. Another one is cottonwood. And the cottonwood trees that can tie very strongly to coffee and to legumes. So if you don't, if somebody has a legume sensitivity and it's cottonwood season, you'll probably have to cover both allergies to allow them to eliminate it. Sage also plays a role in this and has a relationship. Sage and cottonwood, sage and legumes, and sage and coffee. So those are some concomitant reactions that can occur with allergy that if they're not covered, one can be an imbalance of the other. And clinically, I have found that grasses are generally tied to, can be tied to a wheat sensitivity. And the wheat sensitivity can be tied to B vitamins, an intolerance there. So sometimes if you can't eliminate a wheat sensitivity, and it's grass season, you have to cover both of those. If there's an intolerance of B vitamins, you might not be able to cover the wheat sensitivity. And then tied to this also seems to be corn as a grass and the pollen itself. So there can be a kind of a concomitant reaction that way, and I have observed that. So when the corn is pollinating, now this isn't the vegetable that you eat, but the corn pollen, contributes to grass intolerances, somewhat tied to wheat and tied to B vitamins. Intolerance to B vitamins may not allow you to neutralize wheat. Wheat as a sensitivity may give you trouble with grasses or corn pollen. So these are some concomitant elements that are tied to these things relative to pollens. And in this one area, I would add one mold, and that is Alternaria. Alternaria is a mold that can contribute to an intolerance to cedar and to yeasts. So it'd be important to look for those concomitant reactions. Sometimes if there's one allergy in one particular area, that allergy has to be eliminated to allow the other allergy to be covered. So be aware of some of these. Clinically, there might be others that you discover on your own. For the most part, these have been ratified or verified many times over, and we know that they exist. But be aware of them. Giving support to eliminate allergy to one of these elements may require the coverage of one of the others. If they're not given support, you may not ever eliminate the sensitivity. And if there is one sensitivity, you may want to look and see if it doesn't lead to the other. This would be an important aspect of covering allergy in addition to the information we've given on the phenolics. Examine the chart. Be aware of what phenolics are contained in foods. Be aware of concomitant reactions in foods from grasses and pollens. And be aware of some weeds and weed crossovers to different foods. And a part of these, I believe, exists because of the phenolic principle, and that's why we've chosen to lecture about them here. These are strongly tied to that phenolic concept. The complex hydrocarbon is a subcategory of the foods that we're eating can have a relationship. So phenolics have a role to play in this. We want to continue our discussion about allergy with a practical demonstration of testing on the allergy point and the related meridians to allergy, and then also a way to test for absorbability and biocompatibility of different substances that might be used. And for a part of this demonstration, we're also going to illustrate the use of just a point testing device called the C29A, I guess is now the new model number. This is a device that is used for biofeedback for the galvanic skin response. It has a stylus or point tester and a probe that the client can hold. These are connected together. We get a readout on the, I guess it's actually a glorified ohm meter, if nothing else. It has its own self-supporting battery system that's rechargeable. And this can be interfaced with a computer, or it can be used as a standalone. It also has a top that's active that can be activated or deactivated as needed. But for purposes of our demonstration, we're going to use a test plate. And this is a takeoff or a makeup of one of the same processes that Reinhold Voll used in his original system. And basically, we want to demonstrate how to evaluate allergy and how to test for allergy relative to certain substances, and an important demonstration of that. On this particular device, when we're testing, we like to have balance right at 50, and we'll look for the ohm meter, the little guide, to go to this middle mark here, just below the stylus. So the 50 would be in that area. That would be balanced. Below that or above that, an inflammatory response if it's higher, a degenerative response if it's lower. But for something to pass what we would call our allergy test relative to balance on the meridian for allergy, it needs to stay within the normal range. It can't have an adverse impact. If it goes too high or too low, that imbalances the allergy meridian, and that would be how we test it. Now, our willing subject here, when we test allergy, two things are important to remember. Allergy has its own meridian. It flows along the middle finger. There is not an organ that is involved in allergy. It's a total body response. Although symptoms or conditions can occur in other places, The allergy vessel represents a total body response when measuring it. Verification of allergy and allergy symptoms are important because of that total body response. So we test not only allergy, but we should verify it against at least one other point. Most commonly, the large intestine. And we use the large intestine because that is where things are absorbed in the body. So the primary focus in testing allergy, we would test the large intestine meridian to begin with to make sure that it's balanced, and then we'd also test the allergy meridian to begin with to see if it's balanced. It's important that they be balanced. If you're just testing for a response against a substance, because it makes a significant difference in the question that you're asking the body. So we'll have our willing subject hold on to the probe. We're going to hydrate her hand just a little bit, not that she needs it, but just so everybody understands the technique. Hydrate the tip of the stylus, and we're going to go ahead, test the large intestine. We're going to test the two points on large intestine and 2 points on the allergy meridian. And we'll look and watch, listen to the sound, but also look to see how the ohmmeter reads the value. So we'll start first with the large intestine. And that goes pretty close to the normal range. Test the secondary point. So it's important we make a note here, since we're not using the computer, we make a note here that the large intestine is balanced. And we'll go to the allergy meridian. That point is in the normal range. And the second point is in the normal range. So to begin with, we know that it's balanced and the two meridians that we're going to work with are in the normal range. Now, an additional aspect of this is that allergy has an influence on the Chinese model of medicine and the concept of yin and yang. So true verification of allergy, we should test not only the right hand, but we should also test the left hand. So we'll go ahead and do that. We'll hydrate both points. We're going to test the large intestine. You might not be able to see that, but you can hear that it's pretty close to the normal range. And then the allergy meridian. And that was me, not her. I got a little bit too much water on there. So we do have balance on both hands, on both sides of the body, and on both meridians that we want to test. Now, this is just an example, but primarily we do use the large intestine meridian. It can be, though, that if there's problems with lymph drainage, that you'd want to use the lymphatic meridian. It could be if there's sensitivities or intolerances that are creating problems with the endocrine system, you'd want to test that. You may want to compare it with the values on the pancreas or the stomach points on the toes. When you're testing allergy, though, don't just test the allergy meridian. It should be verified or ratified against at least one other meridian, if not two. But for our purposes for demonstration, we're just going to use these two meridians. I'm going to trade hands with you again just for the testing part. Now we have this test plate in place, and it is a part of the circuit. If you listen when I touch it with a stylus, you hear it. It's in the circuit. It's just like on the probe, when we test the probe, it's in the circuit. So now, since we're dealing with an electrical entity, we can introduce things to this circuit and see what the body's responses are to those things. And this is how you would use this device relative to testing allergy, but it would be the same for any substance or any remedy or recipe that you want to use. You can introduce any of those things to the circuit. This is now in the circuit, and you can test the body's response to those and see if it needs it. And you can hear from that response she really doesn't like that, and I don't blame you looking at what the bottle is. That put hair on your tongue. That's just a little humor. Okay. Well, that is the way the process is done. So, for example, if the client presents, here we have a number of samples of different vitamins or minerals. It may have already been determined that she needs these, and she's testing them to see if she is absorbing them and they're compatible. This is not a test for the vitamin deficiency. This is a test for absorbability and biocompatibility of the substance. So we make the assumption that in this case, the client is taking these substances. She's not certain whether they're effective or working or not. If she's getting the benefit out of them, she knows that she needs them, but she wants to test if they're effective. So we take, for example, the first capsule. All we have to do is introduce it to the system by literally putting it on the plate. Now, for an effective test of this kind, if you know ahead of time that you're going to do this, it would probably be best to have the client avoid taking them a couple of days before the test. It's not an absolute. If you have to, you can test for them the same day if they've just taken them. But it could be that the response is masked, or if they're having a trouble with them, when the meridian is tested here, it might be out of balance, and it could be indeed the vitamins or minerals that are creating the imbalance. So ideally, if you have control over that, you might want to ask that they not take them a couple of days before coming in to test. So here we have something introduced to the circuit. We're going to now test and ask the body, is it absorbed? And we challenge it by testing it on the large intestine and these two points. We know to begin with that these are balanced. We introduce it to the circuit, test the point, and we get balance. It goes to 50. In other words, it doesn't make a change. Implied in that, then, is that this maintains the balance of the large intestine, or it doesn't detract from it. Then we want to test for biocompatibility on the allergy meridian. We're going to ask the body, if we introduce this to the body, does it create a reaction or a response? Does it make something else become imbalanced? And we test it on the allergy meridian. Make sure it's hydrated. And we get a kind of a high response there. It's an inflamed response. So implied in that is that this particular substance, this particular pill, isn't biocompatible with the body, and she probably shouldn't be taking it. If that's the case, there's a couple other options. You may want to discontinue that particular supplement altogether. You may want to try to neutralize that, and that will be demonstrated on the computer on another tape. Or you may want to just discontinue for a while or use a different brand and just see if you can alter that response. But right now, indicated in this particular part of our test is that this substance doesn't create biocompatibility. There's something about it that she doesn't like. We'll go ahead and find a couple other samples here to test. Now, ideally, if it balances on this hand, if we had tested this and it balanced on this hand, we should go to the other hand, and we'll find something here she likes and do that. But since we already have one reading that shows it doesn't maintain balance, we don't need to test any further. We have the indication of that. Here's another substance. She doesn't know what this is either, I suppose. We test it. It was close to the normal range. And you might not be able to see that meter, but you can certainly hear the sound, and it's not biocompatible at all, so we wouldn't recommend you keep taking that. That probably really is putting hair on your tongue. We'll introduce another substance. And so far, she doesn't like anything that she's taking. Way to go. Good job. That's something I do by habit, and I should explain what I'm doing there. Every time we introduce something to the circuit, there's a photometric relationship that retains some energy on the plate. So every time you take something off this plate, it should probably be cleared. And the way you clear that is by touching the stylus, bringing the optimum energy, and that will clear out the photometrics of that process. I will introduce another substance here. And that shows good balance on all four of those points, so we'll have her traded hands and make sure that it works on the other side. Always run out of water at the last point. That was. And so we have biocompatibility and absorbability on both sides of the body, and she can keep taking that substance, which happens to be vitamin C. Illustrated there is just exactly how that should be done. If we introduce a new substance, touch the plate and clear it. Biocompatibility, absorbability are all important part of testing for allergy or sensitivities to different substances. Anything can be introduced to the circuit. We can put anything on the plate. We can also test, in a sense, bigger samples, articles of clothing. Compatibility of anything can be introduced to the circuit. You don't necessarily have to put it on the plate. You can just have it placed in their lap. They can put it in their pocket if they're carrying anything that they want to test. They can just carry it and test it with and without, and it can be measured to see if there's a response or reaction to those substances. This is a measurement of just how well it's absorbed and whether it's biocompatible or not. This does not tell us if it's effective as a substance. It just tells us the body's probably absorbing it and it is not creating an allergic response in the body. For testing effectiveness, it requires a different process, and that is discussed in another part of a tape in the advanced mode for testing, and that's discussed in that tape to tell you how to measure effectiveness. But this is the way that we measure for allergy, biocompatibility, and effectiveness in terms of absorbability. If things aren't being absorbed, if they're not biocompatible, chances are the substance isn't making a difference in the body that's being evaluated. We want to do a little bit of a demonstration on the C29A. This is a version of what Reinhold Voll's original machine was designed like. It's got a basic ohmmeter that allows us to measure the current. It has a probe that is given to the client that they can hold, and it comes with a stylus. It comes pre-calibrated, or with a device in it that allows it to be pre-calibrated, meaning that the normal range would go right to 50. It has volume controls that are available. It has rechargeable batteries so that they can be used over in a number of settings, and you can recharge it and take it with you wherever you want to go. And it has an active top plate. It doesn't give an audible test like a metal plate would, but it does show when it's active and when it's not active. And basically the principles are exactly the same with this device if it's hooked up to a computer or if it's standalone. The calibration matches exactly. The readout on the chart, the process itself will always correlate if you use it on a computer, but it also provides information. If you just get this system, you can do a number of things testing. The same principles would hold true. We start with the same techniques. We hydrate the probe, give it to our willing client who's more than anxious to be tested, make sure that they're hydrated, and then test the control points as we normally would. And you can control the sick cow sound if you like. You can turn it all the way off, although that gives you audible clues as to whether or not you're on the point. I prefer some sound to allow us to find out what we're testing. Basically then an individual would go through all the acupuncture points, and what we'd be looking for is the meridian on this particular readout that has the most significant drop. That means that when we get to a point that we're testing, here we have one that's balanced and it goes to normal, we'd hold it on that point. I don't want to do it till it hurts, but we'd hold it on that point until the ohm meter started showing a drop. And that would be the clue, the visual clue, of where to start testing for the meridian. Then we could activate the top plate, introduce remedies, substances, a glandular therapy, pre-prepared homeopathics, single homeopathic remedies, based on our knowledge of the meridian. Those can be introduced to the circuit and tested to see if they balance this particular point. The process is the same as with a computer. We test all the control points, we test all the meridians, we test the hands and the feet, and measure and look for the point that has the most significant drop. Without a computer to help you keep track of it, you'd have to monitor it in your head, but you could do very well using this particular device. It is a biofeedback device that measures a galvanic skin response at the acupuncture meridian points. The basic techniques, as have been illustrated with other devices, apply for this one in our... it's quite an acceptable device to be able to measure the meridian. It's just not computerized. It will allow the same end result. It would probably just take longer. Not too long ago, a client gave me a copy of an article that was in a newspaper about multiple chemical sensitivity people and their intolerances to the environment. And the article was not at all in favor of those kinds of sensitivities. Basically, it said that they were really misdiagnosed mental conditions that needed a support. Basically, concept that their allergies were all in their head. Well, based on our clinical experience, environmental sensitivities exist. There's not a question in my mind that they have an influence or do have an influence in the body. And it's an important aspect of allergy. It's not uncommon anymore to find somebody totally sensitive to everything in their environment, to be totally intolerant of all their foods or many of their foods, to have problems with malabsorption, to have people sensitive to many molds and pathogenic yeasts, to have people sensitive to lots of pollens, where allergies are just pervasive throughout the body. It's a category of client that a clinical ecologist would have choose to evaluate. They call it MCS, or multiple chemical sensitivity, or EI, environmental illness. It is controversial in mainstream medicine because many clinical psychologists or psychiatrists can find a diagnosis that matches a certain criteria or priority in their perspective, and indeed some of these individuals could fall into that category. It's been my experience, though, that environmental illness or multiple chemical sensitivity is a very real response. I don't discount the aspect or concept that there is a psychological response to one's environment and in relationship to being chronically ill for a long time. There is certainly an emotional piece. Based on other things that you've seen in this particular segment on allergy, you know emotion has a role to play. And it would be important for resolution not only of the allergies, but the emotional aspect of any illness to be addressed at any point in time. In our experience, homeopathy provides for that opportunity. Homeopathy will literally help with the rebalancing not only of the physiological aspects, but the emotional and even somewhat the spiritual aspects of what the body exists, or the imbalances that exist in the body. We need to be aware of that. We exist not only on a physical plane, but we have an emotional plane, a spiritual plane, and a mental plane. And all of these things in our wellness approach need to be addressed. All of these elements can contribute to imbalances, and all these imbalances can be manifest by symptoms, conditions, intolerances, imbalances in the body. So we want to be able to address those things. Environmental illness though, has a unique place, and in addressing those chemical sensitivities, one has to be allowed, given support, given therapy, homeopathic therapy, that allows one to at least exist with some degree of tolerance in the environment. It's pretty difficult to eliminate all the sensitivities at once, but homeopathy works very well in that regard. One of the reasons I like homeopathy is that it allows or provides a therapy that requires very little energy for absorption. As long as it's biocompatible, the body doesn't have to convert homeopathy to a usable or an applicable kind of therapy. An herb must be broken down. Vitamins and minerals must be broken down. Even our foods must be broken down into a usable form that can be converted to energy to make changes. But homeopathy has a direct application to the cells and cell tissues and works very well with environmental illness. For the most part, as we've discussed with dilutions and doses and strengths, to begin with, if you have a person that's environmentally sensitive, has multiple chemical sensitivities, homeopathy of choice would be in a water or aqueous base. If that's not feasible or if you don't have that compatibility, then the homeopathic therapies, pre-prepared therapies that are used, should be put in some hot water. The water should be boiled, allowed to cool just a bit, and then as long as it's still steaming, though not boiling hot, the drops can be placed in the hot water and dissipate out the alcohol, and then the individual that's chemically sensitive can still get benefit from the homeopathic therapy that's found in that particular remedy. They can drink those drops over a period of a couple of minutes instead of just putting them under the tongue. It's important to be aware of that particular concept. It's important to know that there are people out there with multiple chemical sensitivities, and if the remedy is in a messenger that doesn't get through, if the body tries to receive that message and is already responding to the carrier, they won't get the message. So I'll be aware of that particular concept in this particular category of allergy. Other things to note are that most of these people, as they're chemically sensitive, you yourself as a technician would not want to be wearing any perfume, colognes, hairsprays, anything that gives off a significant odor. You will impact their health, you'll impact their meridians, and you will not get an accurate reading in response to the things that you want to evaluate. They could be responding to your chemicals on your body as well as the things in the environment, and the accuracy of the testing would be very critical. So it's important that that people doing this kind of testing, if you see a number of clients with multiple chemical sensitivities or environmental illness, that you yourself try to stay away from chemicals on your clothing. It's probably a good idea for all of us to follow some of the same principles that EI people would have to follow. Basically, eating very pure organic food, staying away from tainted or not purified water, and not breathing fresh, purified air. All those elements would be conducive to wellness for everyone, not just the chemically sensitive. Other things that can be important to them are clothing and the environment. Try not to use anything in the environment that gives off an odor. Things that chemically outgas can be new carpet, painting, overhead lights. All these things should be avoided as an expression of allergy, but also having an impact not only on the chemically sensitive individual, but having an impact on anybody that's being tested. Wherever there's a test area, we try to use indirect lighting. We try to stay away from fluorescent lighting because of the adverse impact it can have on an individual. This would be important to for EI people as well as anybody else that's being evaluated. The other things about EI that are important to know is that their endpoints or the supporting dose can be quite dynamic. It can change from one level to the next as the body tries to respond. And it would be important to try to give them support for that change if it's at all possible. The significance of that will not be lost on you when you see people that are chemically sensitive, and one day their drops are working and the therapy's doing fine, and the next day it's not. The dynamics of the body are such that it will change on a regular basis, so it's important to help them monitor that. But there is a reason behind environmental illness. There's a reason behind multiple chemical sensitivities. These devices would allow you to find that possible reason to give support to the body, maybe the liver, maybe the kidney, something not eliminating the toxicity. There can be an emotional piece, as we mentioned earlier, that needs to be addressed, and that part should be supported as the sensitivities are reduced. In my opinion, though, environmentally sensitive people have to be treated a little bit differently for the dynamics. They're always in a toxic environment, as we are all, but their bodies respond on an ongoing basis and need more support on one level than maybe other people do, till you get them to a certain point where you can help them sustain and maintain. The sensitivities are easy to track with the devices. You can give support for all of them. There's very few things that can't be covered, neutralized, or desensitized in terms of supporting them for environmental illness. But be aware of the needs and the sensitivities of these individuals. Make sure that you don't create problems for them where they're trying to eliminate those. And it would be important to investigate those sensitivities before testing them. If you know ahead of time that you're testing somebody that's quite intolerant to their environment, you can benefit the testing a lot by making sure your environment in your office doesn't create a problem. A couple of important things about allergy and testing them for children. An interesting study was done relative to mothers and their children. If a child is presented with a number of allergies and sensitivities, studies show, and in research in England, that many times the child will not be able to improve unless the mother is covered for her sensitivities. There's a significant relationship between a mother and a child. It doesn't matter what the sex of the child is, the bioenergetic relationship is extremely close. So oftentimes, as in treating children, it would be important in covering their allergies that one also cover the mother's allergies. It's not unusual in certain cases for a mother to say, "Well, I don't think I have any sensitivities, but my kid is really full of them." Well, the child got them from somebody. The genetic predisposition to allergy is a very significant piece. So it would be important to cover the mother for her sensitivities, even if they may be slight or not as significant. When we test children, we adjust doses just a little bit, but the same principles hold true. A V dose for neutralization, X dose for desensitization and detoxification. C doses are generally pretty good or preferred for children in all of those applications. A C dose is also a good place to start for inhalant sensitivities. So using the C dilutions for children would be a good place to start to test for balance. Now sometimes little fingers and little children don't mix real well with point testing. And on the computer or on the tray or in the device that you choose to use, if you can't, get them to relax for a long period of time, you may need to test in combination. Test whole groups of things instead of one individual thing. Test whole groups of dilution strengths instead of one dilution strength. By that I mean what you, on your tray or on the computer, activate several substances at a time and then test the points. It will facilitate their cooperation if you make sure that a lot of your testing is done ahead of time in that regard. Get a lot of information from the parents. Find out sensitivities and intolerances, and then help verify or ratify the dose without having to stress the child any more than they may be in the process of the evaluation. So preload some things by for testing children. That would mean having pre-prepared doses available that can be put on the tray or introduced to the circuit. Also, there are some ways that you can surrogate test an infant. You can place the infant in a mother's arms, have her hold the probe against the baby's body, and then you can test her hand, and it will represent the mother's the baby's body, even though you're testing the mother's hand, as long as the stylus is touching the mother's hand and the probe is touching the baby's body. That will represent the baby's bioenergetic relationship to the substances that you're testing. If the baby is a little bit bigger, you can just stick the probe in their diaper and have direct contact that way and still test their fingers the normal way. If the child is even bigger, it would be best to have the baby or the child sit by themselves in the chair. If they can't, they can sit on the mother's lap, and if they can hold the probe on their own, that's okay. The mother can help hold the probe in the child's hand, and then you can test the child's fingers for their meridian and meridian imbalances. Or the surrogate type of testing where the mother holds the probe against the child's body and then the mother's hand is tested. In that relationship, you can also see how significant it is to make sure that mothers might be balanced also. That role has a significant influence on getting not only the child better, but sometimes the mother better. It's important that both be balanced, and there is a great relationship in those things.